Love being together. It's great, isn't it? Good. Last week, Matt and myself started to share with you some of the things that God has been challenging us and revealing to us about the year ahead. And we talked about that this is a year of transformation, that 2019 is a year of transformation for us as individuals, for us as a church, and that we would see that spill out into the world around us. One of the definitions that we talked about last week is this, that transformation is a marked change in form, nature, or appearance. I'll say that again, a marked change in form, nature, or appearance. So when we talk about transformation, we are expecting a change. We are expecting and inviting change. And over the next year, over the next little while, there's lots of things and lots of activities that we are involved with, that we're planning, that we're doing, that are all coming out of this sense that this is a year of transformation. You'll have seen some of these things flash up at the start on the rolling adverts on the screen. But Stephen, if you could just pop up some of the things that we're doing. So, yeah, just go on to the next one as well, Stephen. Yeah, so we over the next few months, I mean, these are the things that we want you to look out for. We're doing transformed worship nights. I mean, wasn't the worship this morning great? Amen. Really great to get into to God's presence. And so we are making sure that we allow extra time to get into God's presence by having some transformed worship nights, because we're expecting that when we meet in the presence of God, when we spend time telling God how awesome and big that he is, that it has an effect, an influence on us. The first one of those is 10th of Feb. Put it in your diary. Our life groups. If you're not part of a life group, come and talk to us about that. It's great. We've got quite a few people who've joined us recently, and most of them have said, look, we want to buy into life groups straight away. That's so encouraging, because life groups are the real heart of how we do life together. It's good to come together on a Sunday morning, but this isn't it. And across our life groups, we've got various things happening. We're starting off doing the prayer course, which is, again, a great place to be. If we want to be changed by God, then being in a place of prayer and giving ourselves the tools to do that is really important. Looking beyond Alpha, we've already mentioned, we're expecting to see transformation in ourselves, in people, through Alpha. We're looking at having a season of prayer. Just, by the way, we don't do prayer seasonally in this church, do we? Don't misunderstand. But when we talk about having a season of prayer, we're having a concentrated, together, unified period of prayer, because we believe that that changes things. And we've seen that. We do this. This is part of our culture in this church, that we have seasons of prayer. And we believe that we see change, because we are a community of people who come together and pray. We're looking at how we can transform the world outside. We're looking at the community cafe. Some of you have been involved in discussions of those recently. So there's lots of things. We have got one or two more slides. We're just, I know that you know all this, but I'm just trying to put some context into where we're heading this year. The Malawi trip, there's a great team of people who are going out to be involved in change, but we recognise the fact that God is going to do some change in them as a team, because they're putting themselves in a place of serving. We are excited about transformation. The building, you know, this is a long-term conversation that's been happening about our current building. We are expecting a transformation. It's a long process, but we're believing that this year we're going to take big steps forward. There's a lot of things going on behind the scenes, but we are expecting a building transformation as well. And you know, when we are changed spiritually and on the inside, it affects and dictates change on the outside. Do you know, when you're changed on the inside, you can see it on your face. You know, when we have difficult periods of time, when we go through times of sadness or illness, it's displayed, isn't it, on our faces. But when we have a change, when God changes us, and we can also see that on our outward appearance. So I want you to be really excited about the things that are happening, but also want you to know why we're in this thing called Transformation 2019 and how that is how that's being played out in the things that we're doing. So we're doing a series over the next couple of weeks about courage and confidence. What's that got to do with transformation? Well, who here likes change? Some of us do, but I can guarantee that there will be people who generally like change, but there'll be certain things when it comes down to it, you go, well, didn't know it really meant that. I'm realising that as the older I get, the more stuck in my ways that I get. And I get challenged on certain things as to why I do them. I won't go there. But actually, when we are faced with change, it's not always comfortable. And we actually do need a big degree, an element of courage to be able to roll with it and run with it. And so we're going to be talking a lot about transformation this year, but we're also going to be talking a lot about courage, because courage needs to be present for us to get for us to get into transformation. Now, when we talk about courage, there are various different levels of courage. There's Dutch courage. You see that? I'll have a bit of Dutch courage, a little bit of an alcoholic beverage just to get me through, because that will give me the courage to do what I need to do. That is not the courage that we're talking about in this context. It's not even reckless courage either. I'm not a big one for roller coasters and things anymore. And to me, to get onto one of those would feel a little bit like reckless courage. And it's not even a rare moment of courage. You know, and we see, particularly in the New Year's honours lists, don't we? We see people honoured for moments of bravery, and that is fantastic. And they should absolutely be honoured and rewarded for those moments of bravery, and which we all hope that when we need to pull that out of the bag, that we'll be able to. But that's not even the courage that we're talking about in this context either. Because the courage that we're talking about, and the courage that God wants us to have, is a courage that is in action every day, and every moment of every day. It's not just something that we momentarily have. If you like, courage is a lifestyle, courageous living. And that means that when life's going well or when it's going bad, in the ups and the downs, we are courageous people displaying courage. A definition of this courage could be putting our confidence in God and stepping out in faith despite the fears and the challenges of life. Putting our confidence in God and stepping out in faith despite the fears and challenges of life. And we really see this courage at work and really well displayed in the life of Joshua and Caleb. And we're going to spend the next couple of weeks looking at these two chaps. Zoe's going to pick up next week talking about Joshua, and we're going to have a little look at Caleb this morning. But these were two contemporaries. These were two friends who lived through the same period of history. They started off in Egypt together. They would have grown up as slaves. They would have known the hardships. They would have seen what their parents went through to raise them as slaves, and they would have experienced the awfulness of the slavery themselves. And then they experienced the Exodus, the rescue from Egypt, the dramaticness of seeing all the plagues that God inflicted on the Egyptians, and the dramatic rescue and the parting of the Red Sea. And I mean, wow, what a period of history to live through, because there was a lot of big events packed into a small chunk of history. They spent the wilderness years together. They wandered around with the Israelites for those 40 years together. They went through that. And eventually, they entered the land together. So these were two friends, two contemporaries who experienced life together. And we'll pick them up in Numbers 13. If you've got Bibles, then you can flick over into Numbers 13. But I'm going to read it anyway, so don't worry. But right at the start of that chapter, God says to Moses, look, I'm giving you this land. You know, I've rescued you. Here you are. This is the big moment. I'm going to give you the land of Canaan. But what I need you to do is I need you to send some people in and you need to explore the land. You need to see what's in there. You need to see what you're up against. You need to do a bit of a recce. So he sends, so that's what he does. He sends 12 people in. And if you're following it with me from verse 17 in 13, chapter 13, that is, when Moses sent them to explore Canaan, he said, go up through the Negev and on into the hill country. See what the land is like. And whether the people who live there are strong or weak, few or many. I love this actually because it's not like God needed to know. It's not like he'd sent them to find out on his behalf. God already knew, didn't he? He already knew what they were like. But he needed for them to see the facts and to see what they were up against. See what kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? What kind of towns do they live in? Are they unwalled or fortified? How is the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there trees on it or not? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land. It was the season for the first ripe grapes. So they went up and explored the land. From the desert of Zin as far as Rehob towards Lebo Hamath, they went up through the Negev and came to Hebron. When they reached the valley of Eshkol, they cut off a branch bearing a single cluster of grapes. Two of them carried it on a pole between them, along with some pomegranates and figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshkol because of the cluster of grapes the Israelites cut off from there. At the end of 40 days, they returned from exploring the land. So they'd done this successful trip. They'd been sent out. They'd explored it. It doesn't look like they were challenged. When I was reading it, I thought, I wonder if anybody felt threatened by these people walking around. And if, you know, because they must have stood out like a sore thumb, really. They've just come out of slavery, out of Egypt. They would have looked different, I would have thought. But they've successfully explored this land. And they've even found some fruit. I mean, and I love the detail there. There's two of them that are required to carry on a pole a cluster of grapes. They must have been huge. So they come back and they report what's going on. They came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev, the Hittites, Jebusites, and Amorites live in the hill country, and the Canaanites live near the sea and along the Jordan. Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are." And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. And they said, "The land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there. The descendants of Anak come from the Nephilim. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes. And we looked the same to them." That night, all the people of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, And the whole assembly said to them, "If only we had died in Egypt or in this desert. Why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to each other, "We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt." Then Moses and Aaron fell down in front of the whole Israelite assembly gathered there. Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had explored the land, tore their clothes and said to the entire Israelite assembly, "The land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will swallow them up. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them." And it's really interesting when we read that, the two sides, the two reactions that we get from the two people groups. One of them, the 10, was a negative one. The other, the two, Joshua and Caleb, was a positive one. But the facts were the same. Right at the start of that, the facts that they presented were all the same. The land is flowing with milk and honey. It is a good land. It is productive. It is a land that we would want to live in, that anybody would want to live in, because it meets all of our needs. It is a good land. The fact also remains that there are powerful people who do live in big cities, and those cities are fortified. Those were the facts. Caleb was not denying the facts when he said, "Look, we can do this. We can take this land." He wasn't saying, "Oh no, there aren't powerful people and it's not going to be a challenge." He knew what he was up against, but he felt that they could do it. Whereas the others said, "Look, we can't do this." And they start to list the reasons why they can't do it. "These people are too powerful for us." And they start to become ruled by fear. And as that account goes on, the fear that they are starting to be ruled by escalates and escalates, to a point where the whole Israelite company is affected and ruled by the fear that they have sown. And so God's reaction is this, in chapter 14, verse 20. "The Lord replied, I have forgiven them, as you asked. Nevertheless, as surely as I live, and as surely as the glory of the Lord fills the whole earth, not one of the men who saw my glory and the miraculous signs I performed in Egypt and in the desert, but who disobeyed me and tested me 10 times, not one of them will ever see the land I promised on oath to their forefathers. No one who has treated me with contempt will ever see it. But because my servant Caleb has a different spirit and follows me wholeheartedly, I will bring him into the land he went to, and his descendants will inherit it." The consequences of living by fear and under fear was not to enter the promised land. So the Israelites had been through all that they'd been through. They'd had the dramatic rescue from Egypt that they'd been so enslaved with for so long. And they had had such an expectation of the land that God had promised them. And yet when it came down to it, when they were faced with the possibility of moving into the promised land, moving into the promised place of God that God had for them, fear overtook, and they listened to the voice of fear rather than the voice of God. And as a result, all of those people who lived under fear never entered the promised land. And you know, we can miss God's best for us. We can miss his perfect plan and the promises that he has over our lives when we allow fear in, when we allow fear to have a foothold, when we listen to the voice of fear and we don't listen to the voice of God. And when we don't have the courage that we're talking about this morning to really enter into that, rather we pick up the voice of fear, that can exclude us from God's best in our lives. Caleb was recognized by God as being different. God said, apart from Caleb, he has a different spirit. And he wholeheartedly follows me. And because of that, he will enter the land. And this different spirit that Caleb has was the difference between entering the land or not, entering into all that God has had for him or not. And it is the same for us. You know, if we have a different spirit, and if we wholeheartedly serve the Lord, then we will enter into all that God has for us. And when we're talking about transformation, being in a year of transformation, then it's and the courage that we need to really enter into everything that God has for us this year, we need to take hold of that same spirit that Caleb has, that same spirit that is different to the one that listens to the voice of fear and listens to the outside influences. We want to have a spirit that serves God wholeheartedly. Who wants to be like Caleb this morning? I know I do. And there's three things I want us to quickly think about this morning from this story about Caleb. And the first is this: courage puts God in first place. Courage puts God in first place. Caleb followed God wholeheartedly. He was fully and utterly devoted to him. He was not half-hearted in any way. He wasn't sat on the fence. He wasn't wavering. And despite the majority in that discussion and in that conversation, he wasn't compromised by the majority because he served God wholeheartedly. And he was not going to allow himself to be influenced by the majority, which is so easy. It's so easy to do. I don't know if it's the same for you as it is for me. I'm sure it quite possibly is. But if you're in a room full of people and the argument is very strongly different to yours, and I suddenly think, oh, maybe I have got it wrong. Oh, perhaps I'll just shut up a bit and see if I can work out where I went wrong. But that's not what happened to Caleb, because he knew what the truth was. And you know, it is possible for us as Christians to be half-hearted. It is possible for us to have a foot in both camps. You know, it's very easy to live this kind of way where, well, you know, when I'm with my Christian friends on a Sunday morning or at life group, or when I know I'm being watched by my Christian friends, I'll make sure that I do behave in the way that I know that I should. But actually, when I'm not too worried about fitting in with the crowd. I'm not too worried about having the conversations that perhaps I might be a little bit embarrassed to have if I knew that my Christian friends were watching. Or I might have standards that are a bit different to the standards that I'll present when I'm with other people. And it's a challenge for us, isn't it, that when we are living our lives, that when we serve God wholeheartedly, that means that what you see on a Sunday morning is what you'll see on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday morning. It means that what I stand for this morning, I will still stand for that in the middle of a in the middle of the night, or when I'm with a different group of people, or when I'm doing something different. It means that the decisions that I make now, that I consider to be righteous decisions, will be the same righteous decisions that I will make when I'm carrying out business and people are not necessarily watching. We can so easily get caught up in the trap of getting our value and our acceptance from the people that we spend the majority of our time with. But when we serve God wholeheartedly and with a different spirit and with a courage that comes with it, then we are able to stand firm all the time. When we live a courageous life, we put God first. We put him in first place. And we don't allow other people to take that place. So courage puts God in first place. But secondly, courage puts fear in its place. Courage puts fear in its place. You know, the 10 spies came from and lived in a position of fear. But the two, Joshua and Caleb, came from a position of faith and of courage. Proverbs 28 starts off like this. The wicked man flees, though no one pursues, but the righteous are as bold as lions. The wicked man flees, though no one pursues, but the righteous are as bold as lions. You know, when we are living righteously, when we're living right and we're wholehearted for God, then there's a boldness that comes with that. And when you think about, I mean, I love the thought of of being as bold as a lion, because you don't think of a lion that's timid or that is trying to keep its head down. When you see the documentaries and that, if there's lions around, they pretty much know that they're top of the food chain, don't they? You know, and they're not sort of behaving like, oh, well, perhaps we'll go and get one of those gazelles and we'll probably get away with it. No, the gazelles are like, oh, I think I'll see if I can get away with nibbling that bit of grass without being noticed. It's that way around. But they have not an arrogance, but they have a boldness that that enables them to walk around and be who they are. And when we, as God's people, live in the right way and to the right standards, it gives us that courage to just stand up and to walk around and go about our daily lives with a boldness, not a fear. You know, stuff happens in life. You know, if we could spend the rest of today all sharing our current, even if we broke into small groups and said, right, okay, we're going to talk about our biggest challenges that we face at the moment, we'd be here forever, wouldn't we? We're all facing challenges and difficulties, and that is life. But it's how we react and how we respond to the things that crop up and the things that present themselves that it's really important. You see, both sets of spies saw and knew the facts. The facts were the facts. They weren't denying that the grapes and the pomegranates were huge and that the land was fertile and that it was a really great place to be and to take possession of it. And they weren't even denying the fact that there were powerful people and powerful cities that were fortified that would need to be overcome. That wasn't the issue. And we don't need to be in denial of the hardships that there are in life, do we? And sometimes I think as Christians we try and get ourselves into a bubble and we pretend that things aren't there when actually really they are there. And they are real things. You know, when there's illnesses, when there's relational breakdowns, when there's bank balances that are on the wrong side of zero, when there are things going on in our lives that are really hard, that cause us a lot of pain and a lot of heartache, we don't need to deny that they're there. Don't ever be afraid of being honest about what's going on in life. But the difference to those things that are in our, that crop up in life, are our ability to handle them and to live right through them. And that's where courage comes in. You see, fear leaves God out. Faith and courage brings God in. The Israelites, the 10 spies, they said, look, we can't attack them. They're stronger than us. God is left out of that conversation. If you read what they say, they've left God out of the equation. They've jumped straight to, we can't do it. They're stronger than us. And the moment that God is left out of that conversation, it is replaced by fear. And when we let fear in, quite often the challenges get exaggerated. When we read on, the account suddenly gets a little bit more embellished by these 10 spies. You've got to know that the land devours people. Well, that wasn't in the original report. There's quite a big detail they left out there. In fact, the people are giants. They're huge. We're like grasshoppers. We're nothing. Oh. They start to see things that aren't even there. And the interesting thing is that when you speak fear, you spread fear. Yeah. Somebody once said, I've had a lot of trouble in my life, most of which has never happened. Fear can eat away at us, can't it? And it can invent things that are never there. And it can exaggerate in our heads. Have you ever exaggerated a problem and really, really got yourself worked up and talked out of it? You could have a scenario like that, like this, going back to our foot in two camps thing, where you're a Christian, you know that you need to be transparent to everybody, but you come up against a scenario where you think, yeah, I could speak some of God's truth into that scenario and that situation. But then a little seed of fear creeps in. What if I say that? They're going to think I'm really silly. And then you start to listen to that, and it can start to exaggerate. Well, not only that, if they start to think that I'm silly, I might start losing some of my friends in this place. They might not want to talk to me. And then, well, that's no good. And then, well, it might just be that they don't like me anymore. And then you really start to exaggerate it and say, oh, no, I've seen how this plays out. I've seen some of the news stories. I'm going to get discriminated for being a Christian. And then I'm going to lose my job. And once I've lost my job, I'll lose my friends. Nobody will want to be with me because I've got no money. And when I've got no money, I've got no house. And I've got... And with all of life's problems and challenges, we can get ourselves into that mental state where suddenly, within the space of 5 seconds, we've got ourselves dead on a corner somewhere. And it was all over something really daft. But that's where, you know, the devil is called the father of lies. And he's very good at knowing what to... Where the starting point is, and that if he allows a bit of fear in, we'll do it ourselves. We'll exaggerate the problem, and we'll have ourselves in a place that was never there in the first place. And this is what happened with the 10 people. They start to exaggerate, and the fear starts to spread. And they even say, oh, look, I reckon God's brought us here. He must have brought us here to die. Well, we might as well have stayed in Egypt. Well, I think perhaps we should go back to Egypt. You go, what? You're only sent in there to come back and say what was the land like, and now you're sending yourselves all back to Egypt. Have you forgotten what Egypt was really like? And the fact that because of you and all their army is under the sea, I don't think they're going to look after you very well. But they seem to miss those things. And they were not in a place of courageous living. You see, courage listens to the facts, but it also silences the fear. And when Caleb silenced the people, when he said, look, listen, the actual original text of that that it was translated from, the silence bit, the silence word, is actually in a much more of an aggression, an aggressive way of saying, "Be quiet." It wasn't, calm down. It was, no, you have got to stop talking, and you've got to stop with this train of thought. In fact, what Caleb was doing was closing that down. Unfortunately, he didn't succeed, but he was somebody who was quite prepared, in no uncertain terms, to close down fear and to close down negative conversation. And we need to be a people, if we're living courageously and faith-filled people, we need to not allow fear into our lives, into our families' lives, into our homes, into our offices, into our schools, into our social times. We need to be prepared to close down fear. How do we shut the door to fear? Well, we need to bring God in. Caleb was very clear. Look, God is for us. Because he is for us, he is not behind those people. They are finished. When we bring God into our situations, it changes the outcome. Courage looks to God, and his presence with us is a real game changer. It's good to know who we are in him. It's good to know how he views us and the position that we are as sons and daughters of the living God. But it's good also to know that simply because we carry his presence, things change. So courage is not an absence of fear in our lives, but it's the presence of God that changes our response to it. Let's refuse to make and choices out of fear, but to make them out of courage and out of faith. You know, those that feared, those that allowed that fear in, never entered into all that God had for them. And you might be in a place of fear this morning as I've been talking, you've identified with one or two things, or that God is just giving your spirit a nudge and saying, actually, I think you're in a place of fear over this. And you might feel that fear, and that's okay. But you need to be courageous, and you need to live courageously and say, yeah, I am not going to allow the fear to rule me. I'm not going to allow fear to rule over that situation. I'm not going to give in to fear. I'm going to allow God, I'm going to bring God in to my situation. Lastly, courage never gives up. You know, it's interesting, the whole of Israel, the whole of that nation, that company of people, got sucked into that hook, line and sinker, didn't they? They listened to the voice of fear and they allowed it to rule over them. And the result was they spent, even though they were on the brink of the promised land, they spent the next 40 years wandering around in circles, just waiting for those that God had said would never enter to die out. But Caleb and Joshua were also wandering around with these people. And I just wonder, how did they feel towards this group of people that they were in? You know, this group of people had really messed it up for them. They might have been thinking, for all of those 40-odd years, we could have been in that land with flowing with milk and honey. Oh, just think of the wine we could have made with those grapes and all of that lovely, tasty fruit, and we're just in this dry, barren desert wandering round and round. We once had my grandmother stay for Christmas, and she wasn't noted for being the most generous of ladies. And we all gave her a present on Christmas morning, as we dutifully were told to do. I think my parents probably organised it. And one of my brothers, who's a bit outspoken, said, "Well then, Nanny, where's our present?" And it was quite clear that she had forgotten And so she got her purse out and she gave us all a 50 pence piece. And my brother, who was a bit outspoken, went, "Is that it?" And she took offence to it and took them all back off us and put it back in her purse. And we were like, "Shut up, what'd you do that for? At least it was 50 pence. And so we were a bit resentful. Now, on a much bigger scale, being kicked out of a land is a bit more than a 50 pence thing. But you know, Caleb could have chosen to have listened to the voice of resentment. And he could have allowed a whole load of stuff in that he could have got to the end of that time feeling quite bitter and quite twisted about the whole thing. But let me just read this in Joshua chapter 10. Because here we jump to practically to the end of Caleb's life. And and what we have is this. "Now then, just as the Lord promised," this is Caleb talking, "he has kept me alive for 45 years since the time he said this to Moses while Israel moved about in the desert. So here I am today, 85 years old. I'm still as strong today as the day Moses sent me out. I'm just as vigorous to go out to battle now as I was then. Now give me this hill country that the Lord promised me that day. You yourself heard then that the Amalekites were there and their cities were large and fortified, but the Lord helping me, I will drive them out, just as he said." I love that. I think that's fantastic that he's wandered around and he's now 85 years old and he's saying, "Brilliant, I've waited a long time for this, but you know what? I am still up for it. I still have that courageous, wholehearted spirit, and I'm going to do, this is my moment." He didn't go, "Oh, well, about time. Oh, forget it. I'm too old now. You know, you should have given me this opportunity when I was in my prime." No, he was still as vigorous in his heart and his spirit as he was as a much younger man. Caleb's courage just seems to get bigger despite the setbacks. Despite the setbacks. He didn't allow his situations to talk him out of what he was, of the opportunity that he had to really make an impact on them entering the land. At 85 years old, I hope that I'm still up for an adventure. And can I just, you know, we have some great spiritual mothers and fathers in our house, don't we? And we love older people. We just want to say we value you, we value the input, and you are so important to us. But can I just remind you that just because you are physically old doesn't mean that you're not in your spiritual prime. You can be as much in your spiritual prime no matter how old you are. But can I also say that if you are young, make sure that you don't have a spiritual pensioner spirit. Because so easily, those of us who are younger in our spirits can behave in quite an elderly spirited way. And we can be afraid to step out and do things. We can talk ourselves out of things a lot easier than we ought to do, because we are thinking in a different way. So as I just draw this to a close, as we enter into a year of transformation, let's be like Caleb. Let's be a people who have a different spirit. Let's be people who are wholehearted for him. When we have that courage, then when God wants to do what he wants us to do, and just remember, you know, when what God has for us, he wants us to enter into fully. He wants us to enter fully into this year of transformation. And it will mean that there's challenges for us personally and as a body. It will mean that there are things that we might not find very difficult. But what we need to know is that there's a promised land that God is drawing us into. There are promises and and things that God wants us to grasp. And as we allow him to change us, we need to put God first. We need to follow him wholeheartedly. We need to be proactive in putting fear in its place. And we need to have a courage that never gives up. Let's just stand for a moment.